Speaking of Grendels, and welcome to the Down in Front Podcast, the official podcast of downinfrontpodcast.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks so much for joining. We appreciate you hanging out with us. Here on the Down in Front Podcast, what we do is review movies, TV shows, sometimes video games, who knows, all while having ourselves one of our favorite beverages. Tonight, we are giving you an exclusive look behind the scenes, not really, review of Suicide Squad, directed by James Gunn. Yes, this is a deja vu. Yes, this movie came out 5 years ago, but they are going to be working on a whole new film. So super pumped to kind of talk a little bit about that, hopefully a little bit of background story before we get into the actual movie itself. Keep an eye out. We will have a spoiler issue. We don't want to necessarily spoil any films, Brylan. We don't want to spoil any films for anybody. So we will let you know when our spoiler sort of section does come up. So keep that in mind. Before we get into our full review, we're going to go around the table, talk about what we're currently are drinking and what else we've been watching. So I'm going to start with my best friend who I really can't go anywhere else without. Brylan, what's going on, man? What are you sipping on tonight? And what else you got going for you?
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Great to see everyone as usual. It's cool that we have movies out that we can talk about and stuff. And what I'm sipping on this evening is water. So got a little warm today, so I just decided to stay hydrated. And the movie, the only thing I've seen is I actually went to the movie theaters and I saw David Lowery's The Green Knight, starring Dev Patel and, I forget her name. Oh, well.
Roseanne Barr.
No.
Rose Byrne?
No, not Rose Byrne, but...
I'm guessing names. I have no idea, to be
honest. Y'all keep on guessing. Alicia Vikander. Man, why did I forget her name? I mean, it's one of those movies that made me miss going to a movie theater. It is visually stunning. It is well told. I mean, the story is from an 800-year-old poem, so you're not going to be shocked if you've been in school for the last hundreds of years or anything like that, or learned anything about the Arthurian legend. But it is done so well in more of that modernist approach. And like, it's not like the dress up is modern or anything. It's more of the themes and the visual ideas are modern. Think of it like how Jorgen Lanthimos, what he did with The Favorite. That's like a perfect like example of how you actually take like some of this very classical and modernize it a bit. And I got the same feeling with this, and it was fun. It was epic. It was also very touching. It also reminded me how amazing of an actress Alicia Vikander is. And I'm not going to spoil anything, but definitely go and see it if you do like any type of period pieces or you wanted something that feels kind of like Game of Thrones and you're missing it out. Green Knight is a great epic poem set to film that's really worth watching.
Yeah, I'm hearing some, like, it's not even mixed reviews. It was just, like, people were talking about the film but didn't want to give it away, which is weird. Because I had no idea what the hell the movie was about. So that is probably something I'm going to see if I can try to catch. It's kind of a bummer. Like, some of the movies that I want to be, I want to see it. I wish it was streaming and they only release it in the theater.
Theater only.
Like, damn it. So just let me stream it. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of those smaller production studios that are hoping that their films can at least make some money while the theater doors are open.
Sure. Well, Brylan, as always, it's great to have you on. It's great to see your face.
Thank you.
I'm going to toss it over to this man who looks jacked tonight, has been working out and wearing his favorite Marcus Smart jersey. What's going on, Blewett? What you got going for you? What you sipping on? And what else you got going for you?
I actually hand-stitched this Marcus Smart jersey because I love him so much. how's it going? My name is Michael. The thing that I'm drinking, I'm actually doing a throwback. Arizona iced tea. Although
what?
A little Wait. Hint of booze.
Wait, what is that? Show that to oh, the show that to the audience.
Alcoholic Arizona.
Let's see that number on the can. Bring it up to us.
4.6.
So it is. And is price on the can?
Oh, price on the can. I don't know.
Who told us about this? I didn't think this was available.
I thought they released it only in Canada.
This was also like a couple of years ago, but
yeah, I think so, yeah. Oh yeah, wow. They were really early on that then, because that was like right when Truly was hitting.
Give me a taste. Give me a flavor profile. Is it medium body, light body, heavy body?
I like most of them. The mango one, not as big of a fan of. I bought like
there's more than one flavor.
Oh, yeah, the black cherry is really good. The lemon, which I'm having right now, is good. And there's one more in that variety pack, and I forget what it is. And it's solid. The mango was the only one that's kind of like harsh.
Yeah,
I just heard. Is it closer to a Truly or closer to like a High Noon?
I've never had a High Noon. That's a lie. I have had a High Noon, but I only had one, and I don't remember it. No, it's less like syrupy like a Truly, so it's a little bit more natural tasting. I switched it up because my normal Jersey Shore watching seltzer, because you have to have a Jersey Shore seltzer, wasn't in stock, so I went with the Zonas, and I'm still working through that because, you know.
No.
Anyway. I also just read today Mountain Dew's doing a hard version, which is going to have 9% ABV. So
that's a Four Loko then, right?
That's a Four Loko.
So because they're not going to drop the caffeine, right?
Nope.
Oh, man. A new generation of college kids are going to learn real fast how terrible alcohol is. There's no beating around that bush. If you pulled up with a Four Loko can, you were wherever you were for one thing and one thing only.
Yeah, and if listeners want to experience that firsthand, you can watch or listen to our Avengers Endgame review wherein Andrew Abbott drank 2 Four Lokos throughout the course of it.
immediately
sent him to rehab.
To be fair, that was wasn't that like the redone Four Lokos that weren't even
Yeah,
like
that was the weaker version, and it's still cost him to nearly tank the episode.
did he have 2? I thought he had 4. I wasn't sure how many he had. He was drinking before the podcast.
Yes.
So I wasn't sure exactly his total amount. But.
So he had a craft brew 4-pack of 4 Lokos. Good.
What are you watching? Let's move on.
Yeah, so I went to a bachelor party this weekend. So ironically, I do have an excuse on why I didn't watch too much. Unlike every other day and weekend, in which cases I got nothing. So I watched The Bad Batch. I'm actually excited about the finale. I thought this was one of the better episodes. I still kind of wished I was going with the Brylan route and just binging it. I think this season, if you're on the fence still and you're like, oh, maybe I could catch it for the finale, that actually sounds like a good plan. Watch it now, do an episode or two per night, and watch the finale on Friday. That's perfect. I had nothing. If we had more episodes left, I'd be like, just wait for the finale and then watch it. But I've been doing that. Also, the movie that I watched was Fear 1994. Does anyone know about this?
Which one?
Fear Street?
Fear Street 1994.
You do realize there's more than one, right?
Yes, but 1994 is the first one.
Is it? I thought it was a 93. Oh, okay.
It's 94, 74. 77, I think, and then 1666. Does anyone know about this series? Because I sure as hell didn't.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I heard it was
R.L. Steinish.
It is R.L. Stein. Like, he wrote the book.
Oh, okay.
The book series was R.L. Stein's attempt to dip into the teenage market.
Yeah.
When his books were saturating the young kids market.
Yeah, and it's I will say this. It is a hard R experience. It is absolutely
like 12 Years a Slave kind of situation, or
what? I thought that was.
Wait, geez. I thought you meant like the rating. Like, there's a lot of violence in it.
Oh, and there's a lot of violence. Yeah, no.
wait, hold on.
You said it's a hard
Which hard R
situation?
Are we talking about?
No, it's not. Yeah, no, definitely the violence and the swearing.
Oh, it's just full of racism.
I was like, wait, what? Wow,
that's wicked funny. Well, we'll see what happens in the 1666 one. Yeah.
Why? In 1994, slavery was still legal, so who cares?
That's true. I think in Arkansas it was. We just lost all one listener from Arkansas, and it was Bill Clinton. Anyways, thanks, Bryland. It was honestly really good. So the way they do it, again, without spoiling, it's three of them. It's like an anthology, kind of think of it like IT. They did an homage in this one. Again, I don't think this is a spoiler because it's kind of like evident from the album art, but this one was kind of like their take on Scream. And I thought it was really well done. You know, it's not going to blow your pants off as an artistic achievement, but I thought it was well done. It was a good homage to the source material. And the kills in it were actually pretty solid. Like, I wasn't expecting this because, again, Caroline, friend of the show, told me that it was a like young adult horror film. And so I thought the thing was going to be like a neutered, like, you know, they get stabbed like halfway off screen. Whoo, there's a couple real brutal things that happen in this. And so if you're looking, maybe not for right now in the high days of summer, but you know, when this episode comes out in end of September, early October, honestly, like I think it's going to be a really good Halloween watch.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they released this in the summer.
So am I.
I understand they did this similar to Stranger Things. They did that a little bit earlier than October last year. But I would imagine they at least try to wait until it gets a little bit cooler and colder, or a lot more people are going to school. And then they sort of center this around a fall time where more people can talk about it and get more people involved. I was really surprised by them releasing that.
So they also shot all three movies back to back to back. And they released them 1 week at a time. So, Warren, to your point, to me, it makes most sense that they would have done it like Halloween's on a Sunday. So it would have made sense to do the 30 or the 29th, the 22nd, you know, and you get that experience. So you get the finale, which, again, not spoiling it, but like it kind of ties. It seems like it will tie into the themes of Halloween really well. And yeah, I don't know why they did it now. It should have been October.
Well, as always, it's great to have you on. It's great to see your muscles. I'm going to toss it over to the newly found vegan. Who knew? Mocha, what's going on, man? What you sipping on tonight? And what else you got going for you?
I will never, ever in my life be vegan. It seems so silly. Hi, everybody. Mocha Mike here. Avid non-vegan. But I have been riding that ovo-lacto-pescatarian wave this year. And I tried getting some non-lacto, non-ovo, non-pesco milkshake today from a local vegan joint that just opened up. It's a strawberry vegan milkshake made with soy-based milk. And man, does it taste like shit. It's really bad. This is the David Ayer's Suicide Squad of milkshakes. it's really just awful, and I wish it was never made. But I'm the fool for paying for a ticket to it. Because that's so bad, I'm actually switching over to a Spindrift. So I'm on the seltzer train with Bluet over here, except mine is non-alcoholic. I'm trying to keep it clean for tonight. Got a big day tomorrow. And as for what I've been watching, I've been on this kick for old school Mobile Suit Gundam this past week. I never watched the OG Mobile Suit Gundam when I was a kid. I watched like some Gundam Wing and all of G Gundam, which is the worst Gundam, but also the best Gundam in my opinion. And but I got this weird drive to watch the OG ones. And fortunately, I found out that Netflix has the three Mobile Suit Gundam movies made back in the 80s, the early 80s, like 81, 81, 82. And these movies are actually the entire original series just condensed down into three films with the same, like, they just took the same content from the series, edited it, added some new scenes for context, and then released them in theaters back in Japan in the early 80s. And it was great. It was really cool getting to that fix of old 80s style anime. I haven't watched anything like that in a while. It was very cool. It was great scene, or being reminded of how brutal that show was. It must have been very cool to experience in the 80s because, like, it, as much as 80s, like early 80s anime could get, it was pretty gory, I feel like, and dealt with some heavy stuff like child soldiers and like the brutality of warfare and all this other stuff. So as a result, I've just been on this Gundam kick and now I'm trying to burn through everything else that is Gundam related. So I will probably be just watching that for the next couple weeks or so.
Just watch Gundam Wing and Super Gundam Wing. You're set.
They're from a different timeline.
There's a lot of Gundam stuff out there. So
yeah, apparently there's a new one on Netflix that's like almost, I think it's a direct sequel to Char's Revenge or something like that.
Yeah, so it's called Mobile Suit Gundam Hathaway, and it takes place, I think, like 7 or 8 years after Char's counterattack. But I haven't watched that yet. I'm trying to watch them all in order. So I watched the original series, and I went back to watch Gundam Origins. Next is 8th MS Team, and then Char's counterattack will come after that.
Have you ever played the video games?
No. I don't think I ever played any Gundam video games. When I was younger, the Mobile Suit game that I would play a lot of was Zone of the Enders, which is kind of like an obscure reference for a lot of people, but that was my go-to mecha battle game.
I feel like I'll Google that later. I feel like I was in love with that game also. That sounds way too familiar just to pop in there, but there was one point where everything tried to be Dynasty Warriors, and Dynasty Warriors was an amazing concept, I think, for like a couple years. And so they made a Gundam game that was like Dynasty Warriors. Uh-huh. It was pretty badass. So
yeah, I think it was Mobile Suit Gundam Musou.
Was it? Yeah.
Cool. I think so. But yeah, I never got to play that one, but it sounds fun.
Well, because as always, it's great to have you on. Great to see your face. I appreciate that you are now the only vegan on the podcast.
Thank you.
My name is Warren. I will be a host this evening. I'm currently sipping on a High Noon Black Cherry. So finally, we are recording not on a Monday, so I can actually drink. So that's actually pretty cool. And I also went to a wedding this week, but still watched some stuff because I don't want to give you any other, you know, half-assed, you know, excuses of why I don't do our homework. I watched Dune. And other than Brylan, has anybody else seen this movie?
The David Lynch Dune?
Mm-hmm.
I did back when I was a kid.
Yeah, I was like 8, 9 years old when I first saw it.
My mom got it and brother. Me on accident as a DVD present for Christmas, and I watched it and was completely amazed. I was like, oh, wow.
This is what? Yeah, my mom and my brother used to watch this film like religiously. Like I used to watch Santa Claus like almost every other day. They used to watch Dune every week, and I had no idea why. So it was nice to kind of sit here as an adult and sort of watch it, you know, start to finish. And I was really glad that I did that because it's like, oh man, this, like I watched Space Odyssey one of the other times, I was like, man, this is really doing a lot and probably influencing a lot of other work after the movie sort of came out. So it's actually kind of pretty cool. And also Patrick Stewart is like Paul Rudd. That dude looks like 80 years old in this movie. And it's weird because it's like, how old is Patrick Stewart? Yeah, it was really weird.
After you see The Green Knight, you should just watch, is it Camelot?
Yeah, well, that's...
No, not Camelot. Excalibur from the 70s.
Oh, really?
With Patrick Stewart in it.
Wait, Patrick Stewart's in The Green Knight?
No, he's in Excalibur.
Okay. I gotta check it out. So love Dune, love everything. I'm probably gonna either A, change my middle name, or B, name our either son or daughter or whoever they identified to be as Muad'Dib. So just keep that in mind. They will be Muad'Dib Jackson. So I'm gonna be pretty excited about that. And then I was trying to give myself a bit of a break yesterday. I'm keeping up and finally enjoying Apple TV Plus. Like, I think we talked a little bit about this, and now I'm like, oh, okay, you guys have like 3, maybe 4 solid shows that are actually streaming somewhat around the same time. Let's do it. So I stumbled upon this Mr. Corman show. I mentioned this in our group chat for all the listeners and was immediately shot down by Brylan and Mocha to saying, I am not watching this. Mocha for sure shot me down immediately. He says, no, I'm good.
What did you
do? Mr. Corman.
No, we wouldn't watch it. We didn't say it sucks or anything.
No, you shot the idea down to watch it.
Don't want to watch a movie about my life story. It's not.
Yeah. It's a TV show, so you have even more time to talk about your life story. No, I loved it. It was a really big focus. So first of all, I love Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I haven't seen him in like anything since Looper, I think, was the last movie I've seen him in. He has this whole thing of like hit record and talk about like just connecting with a lot of different sort of audiences online that I've been sort of following. So I do find that somewhat interesting that he's been like focusing on that. And he comes back and has created the show. He wrote and directed a lot of it. He at least directed the first episode. I'm curious if he's going to come back. And the show definitely hits home. I'm really excited to just to see, you know, some of the focuses on sort of A, mental health, B, a lot of the stuff that, you know, me and a lot of my friends are identified with, you know, whether it's me, you know, working at Apple or something along like that, you know, going back, you know, just a few years or so. So I'm really excited about the show. I think it's something that is a little bit newer, along top of, you know, I watch this show now, Schmigadoon, and now Ted Lasso. And I'm like, these shows are all very different. So good for you, Apple, to keep me sort of engaged with having different types of content that's going to be out there. And physical is the next one up. Because I think the finale just hit, so I can actually sort of like binge that show. So yeah, that's Mr. Corbin. That's streaming on Apple TV Plus. I think you should definitely give it a shot. The show immediately, you can tell immediately if you like it or not within the first maybe 5-10 minutes of the episode. And it uses this sort of sound to somewhat simulate how your main character is feeling, which I haven't quite seen before, or if I had seen it, it's like in comedic moments. And the way they use it is not quite comedic. It's almost like jarring, like kind of putting you in this mental state almost. So I think that's actually kind of pretty interesting. So Mr. Corman streaming on Apple TV right now. So check it out. So with that, we have reached our break in which we're going to do our spoiler section. So what we're probably going to be doing is going into our spoiler of Suicide Squad, this one, and Suicide Squad 2016. Is there any other movies that we are probably looking to spoil?
Just the other Suicide Squads.
Okay.
I would also extend that out to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah,
probably like
Birds of James Prey. Gunnish.
Okay.
So I could also see Slither. Endgame and Infinity War, because they have the Guardians in them.
Rosemary.
Yep. The remake of Dawn of the Dead.
I think that you could do Dark Tower as well.
Three what? Men and a baby.
But All Dark right. Tower also is Pet Sematary, both the original and the remake.
So we are moving into our spoiler section for all of these films. So stay tuned for a full spoiler section of Suicide Squad and everything else we just named. And we are the Down in Front podcast in our spoiler edition of Suicide Squad, directed by James Gunn, currently streaming on HBO Max, along with being in theaters right now. How we normally going to be going in organizing our reviews is that we're going to talk about the acting and characters as a whole. Then we're going to get into who won the film or talk a little bit about the MVPs before we're going to give you our lasting thoughts and conclusions on if it's possibly a recommendation or not. So I'm going to toss this over to Brylan because he has a lot to say about Suicide Squad.
Absolutely, and I'm glad that I get to start off first so I can bogart all the time and not let anybody else speak and, you know, do whatever I want, just like this movie. And I first have to give it up to James Gunn. He went through a lot of crap for this, to get this movie done, and there was, a lot of pre-production drama that got kind of tied into why he made this movie. And usually when we see like a lot of like big storylines of tension or somebody messing up and then being fired from a job and stuff, that it doesn't make a good movie out of it. But James Gunn kind of weathered this storm that came at him. And he has brought an absolutely hilarious, but also very creative movie to life here. And the way I look at it is like James Gunn saw that he had literally a cast of dozens, if not thousands here. It's like, how do you make all of those shine? Just make really cool vignettes for everybody. And then just have, when you're moving to each vignette, be where the team comes together and has some type of conversation or interaction with each other. And then they move to the next vignette. And that's what we got with Suicide Squad. And every single one of these vignettes makes the characters, as brief as they are in this movie or however long they are in this movie, just really shine. And I think one of the characters that just shines more than all, I mean, John Cena. I mean, I know John Cena, he's been the nice, pleasant surprise in a lot of movies in the past. So I think like I remember like his guest spot in Ted was hilarious. And also when he was in Cock Knockers, he was pretty funny there. But man, he goes full board, absolutely redonkulous in this movie. Just being able to play like that deconstructing of the 80s action hero to a T and just dive into it where he's playing it so seriously, it's funny as hell. I mean, I don't think I laughed as hard as like seeing Peacemaker and Bloodsport like just square off against one another when they're just walking through that Freedom Fighters camp, just killing people in different, unique ways. I mean, even though it's a visual gag and it's just gruesome as hell, but when Peacemaker takes that hatchet and just chops that dude like he's chopping just ham or something while he's sleeping, it's one of the funniest things out there. And I mean, it's just hilarious to see someone like John Cena just own up to a character. I mean, he's like kind of like is the standout. He's the Drax of this movie, just like shining just above everybody else, even though everybody else is doing a fantastic job as well.
It's ironic you say that, just because obviously John Cena has the other WWE connection. So maybe James Gunn just needs to take, maybe James Gunn can make Roman Reigns a little bit interesting at some point.
Yeah, give him personality. Roman Reigns is Weasel.
It was that'll be awesome. It was nice to see. Like, it's a good year for John Cena. And side note, I believe you said Cock Knockers. I think it's called Cock Blockers, by the way.
Cock Knockers, yeah. Cock Blockers.
I was like, what movie the spinoff is Brylan watching?
Cock Knockers and Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah, first of all, it's a good year for him being in Fast Nine to kind of popping up in this film. John Cena is for sure a heavy lifter in this movie, but kind of exactly what you said, though, like even more props to James Gunn to be able to take sort of a DC sort of movie, especially because the last big thing we saw from DC was just really coming from Zack Snyder and that whole shit from that Snyder cut. And so that was really the space where everybody was in sort of DC before anything new was coming out. And so now we get this film that has like a nice breath of fresh air that's somewhat familiar, but also still like rooted in funny. And it was just enjoyable. And that was something that I think for a long time we are missing in the DC universe as a whole, of like, man, I'm enjoying myself. This is light. This is funny. Instead of having the rando off like side character moments that in this film, it felt like this entire universe, or the story in this entire film was funny and enjoyable and a little bit lighter. Although you have a hell of a lot of violence, and it was a nice way for him to use that violence to a comedic fashion. It's, you know, you have two people squaring off of each other, killing innocent people, and it's very funny. It's very ridiculous what's happening. And at one point, you're like rooting for them because just like, oh, you're killing bad guys. Oh, it's fine. And then you just turn it around this head of like, you just killed a hell of a lot of innocent good people. What's wrong with you? So it's very funny how he's like slowly revealing things as the movie went along. So yeah. I don't know who's the writer of this film. I don't know if it's Gunn, but I really love the reveals of some of these things. It really kept me on my toes a lot.
It was James Gunn that wrote it.
Oh, he did? And, nice.
And I just loved that. Like, he kind of like said Suicide Squad is Guardians of the Galaxy if they didn't know how to dig themselves out of the hole that they always find themselves in. They just keep on digging because that scene where they're just killing the freedom fighters left and right, when they get up to the end, it's the perfect payoff where you just have everybody's just like denying it. They're just like, oh shit, man. I don't know why they didn't say anything. And then Polka Dot Man, just because he's such a depraved dude, is just like, I thought they were all my mundlers, so I killed them all.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's like one of the funnest things about this movie is like the characters, regardless of how much time they have on the screen, everyone shine. I think like the perfect example of this, and one of my best friends said this is his favorite character out of the movie, is Sean Gunn as Weasel. You see Weasel, basically Weasel doesn't speak any lines. He's just making screams and crazy noises and stuff. He's a weird CG character, but I do believe Sean Gunn's physical performance makes Weasel endearing in a weird, twisted way, but also just some great slapstick comedy to get the movie started and also to bookend it at the very end. So shout out to one of my friends for saying Weasel is his favorite character out of this movie.
Do we think that the Sean Gunn is a new Andy Serkis?
I don't know. I mean, he's done a really good job in the Guardians movies as Rocket. So, I mean, that's him walking around with the other characters. So he's the guy in the Rocket suit. He's not the voice.
Rocket?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
The tiny rocket? What?
Mm-hmm.
I'm confused. Yeah,
he walks on his knees in a lot
of. Oh, okay.
I have nothing against Sean Gunn directly, but Andy Serkis is one of the most incredibly talented people in Hollywood today. So no, he's definitely not the new Andy Serkis. But as long as he has a brother to push him into his movies through nepotism, he could get there one day.
I don't think it's nepotism. I think it's actually pretty cool.
To, I mean, he's good, but he's an old nepotism.
Here's the thing, though.
If James Gunn's movie,
yeah, but if he was bad, here's the thing.
I think it's also like the Wilson brothers. They just love making movies.
But I can understand. I feel like the Ben Affleck, Casey Affleck, that's a little bit more nepotism because Casey Affleck in a lot of these films are not very good. He's not the best. Sean Gunn is actually what's up?
He's also an alleged abuser.
No, it's not a legend. We can have confirmed that. But Sean Gunn is like good at what he does, and he's also funny, and he actually can perform. That's the only reason why I would not necessarily fall under the nepotism, because I had no idea personally. I had no idea that they were even related. I just thought this guy was hilarious and doing all this stuff, and I'm like, oh, cool. And now I see that they're related. I was like, oh, that's I guess that's pretty cool. So I don't know. I give it up to Sean Gunn. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And I would say, like, I mean, one other thing that just made me laugh my butt off is every time they said Nanawe, I knew that I was in for either some scene that's going to be a very gruesome but hilarious way for someone to die, but just, or Sylvester Stallone just hamming it up with this King Shark voice that he made. And I think that was like one thing that I think is just a brilliant stroke from James Gunn is like, get someone like Sylvester Stallone to be the voice of this obnoxious character and to bring a lot of personality to it. The whole idea, like him wanting to sneak into the town with a fake mustache and he starts walking around with his finger. I was loving that just every second of it.
The only thing I'm bummed about this, and it's only because I recently watched the entire Harley Quinn animated, was that King Shark was a hell of a lot better and funny and like endearing and very intelligent. And I feel like, and we'll talk a little bit about this later, that he's sort of going back to the well of a limited speech, non-human character that's CG from a jacked dude, Vin Diesel and Sylvester Stallone. And I'm like, I was really hoping that they would just tweak it a little bit, because that character is already in like people's minds and in the universe, and I was hoping they would bring that character back and make get him played by the guy who is in Everybody. He played the pirate in Dodgeball. He also played K2SO. I'm gonna see if I can pull up his
name. Alan Tudyk.
Yes, exactly. That's an Alan Tudyk role that I'm like, what's going on here? I like Sylvester Stallone in this role, but I feel like they already had the character established already, and I was kind of bummed that it was similar, but nonetheless, very hilarious, and I'm glad that they use it, this physicalness of the shark. Also, how ridiculous that shark was. That was funny.
Yeah.
I mean, this King Shark, he knows Spanish, at least.
I think I may have missed that.
I think, he only learned one word.
See, but, I mean, what else do you need to know?
I think this all kind of, like, the last couple minutes have all really spoken to how well James Gunn gets group dynamics and group relationships. You know, there's certainly, kind of character directors, right? They can take one character and make that amazing. There's place directors that can, really put you in a location. And it's great to have that niche of seeing, like, a competently told movie that you will care about multiple characters throughout, no matter how long or how short they're in the film. And that's a talent that most directors don't have, that they can't manage those interpersonals. I also think it speaks to his reputation that you can get someone like Michael Rooker, and who just gets his head blown off in the first scene. he's a legit actor. I know they've worked together for a lot. I'm sure, like, it didn't take much convincing. But, you could take these guys that are pretty famous and just be like, yeah, you're going to be the opening scene. Nathan Fillion, they've been trying to get into Guardians for a billion years now, and it just has never worked out. And here he is, finally in his James Gunn film. Technically, that's not true. Technically, he was an alien that got mocapped in Guardians 1, but whatever. He has this big James Gunn film breakthrough, and he's just the worst character of all time, and he gets killed almost immediately. By the way, that might have been the funniest moment of the entire movie. It was just that his arms
just the hand slaps,
like walking at a pace and just slapping. That was great. I think that's maybe an underrated aspect of him. Like, obviously the comedy comes out, but making you feel for characters' relationships, even A through Z, essentially, not just A, B, or A, B, and C. Speaking of which, and maybe we can get into this later, but Harley and Flag, I feel like that was kind of under talked about, and maybe we can get into it because I do want to talk about this movie's place in the wider universe. So let's talk about there, but I'm just giving you a little prep.
I'll make a note of it. Brylan, okay. What else you got?
I would say, just to go back to how amazing this film is it's creative in many different ways. Not only it's comedy, not only it's story, not only how it brings out heart in a very twisted environment, but also its action scenes. Like, they're changing up how the action is framed pretty much every single time they have a big action piece, whether it's Bloodsport and Peacemaker doing their, like, little kill off in that Freedom Fighters area, or Peacemaker and Flag's fight, just how that you start to see the fight in the reflection of Peacemaker's beacon of freedom that's lying on the ground. It's so neat and creative to just start the fight that way. But I mean, they definitely let it all out for Harley to just shoot up this whole hallway of people and just have this neat look into Harley's mind while she's killing people, what she sees. And it was a really cool visual spectacle to see that pulled off.
Yeah, I saw somebody else was talking about it, and I sat there and said, yeah, this is kind of a bummer because this is now the third movie with Harley Quinn, right? And she had her own whole gigantic film of this. And this scene was better than just about anything. That scene was better than just about anything she'd done in both of those films. And I enjoyed the Harley Quinn Birds of Prey movie. But man, I was kind of bummed by, like, the over-the-top, somewhat ridiculousness. It was similar to the fight sequence in the police scene in the Birds of Prey. But this, I just felt like this kind of, the way that the stakes and her breaking out and then the comedic bits of her then finding the crew that was coming to save her, like that all one sequence, I thought it was really funny. Even going into the taxi with a goddamn javelin, like you just stabbed a bunch of people in the way that she positioned it in the taxi. That was just like very funny and like rooted into a lot of sort of physical comedy there. And it was like somewhat serious of her killing people. So I felt like that entire, what, 3 minute sequence, maybe 4 minutes, was just better than both of those films, and that was kind of a bummer.
So yes, I'll agree with you, but I don't think it's as big of a gap. I thought Birds of Prey did a lot of like really cool things with that character. But like how most movies do, you kind of just build on it. So yes, it was better because they couldn't go backwards. That's called Batman versus Superman.
I agree. Yeah. I do agree. Let me take it back. The best, I'll take that back and say in the action sequence, everything character related and the character motivations and stuff, that all is much better. Not in this film. That was much better than the Birds of Prey. So good call on that one.
Yeah. But still, I think like, one, I think this was the best gun kata scene I've witnessed in like 15 years. For y'all that don't know,
Equilibrium.
No. There was a couple more that was like a thing for like 2 years. But Equilibrium,
right?
That is like a must watch if you like any sort of dystopian movies. Oh, phenomenal movie. Stupid movie, but phenomenal. So I thought that was great. I think Harley Quinn might be. Like, I think they're kind of starting to figure out that she is the lifeblood of the DCEU. And it's great that they're kind of actually giving her through lines. Like, I think they did some of the animation from that in Birds of Prey. So, again, you're getting more of that in different places, which is actually what a connected universe is about, where you see people's characterizations show up in other films that maybe they're not the main star of. I liken her. She kind of is like the Iron Man of this, where, like, she shows up and it's just, you know, the quippy one that's kind of an idiot and, you know, is kind of a good guy. And so I'd almost like to see them build more around her. Like, I don't know nothing about DC besides like Batman and Superman. So I don't know what other team she's part of, but like, I think that might be your way of one, differentiating yourself from Marvel, but two, putting a cohesive story together. And lastly on Harley Quinn, I feel like this is a weird thing to say. I've kind of enjoyed how they've like desexualized her. But I think that they've weirdly enough made her like kind of more attractive in that regard, you know? So like compared to the first Suicide Squad where, you know, it's like daddy's little girl, she's wearing this really skimpy like outfit. I'm glad that they're giving her stuff that actually looks like she can do some of the things she does in it.
But that's I don't think that this movie can do that. Like I think kind of what you're alluding to though, Blewett, was it's because of that other stuff that happened. Like it's because of the first movie. It's because of her character. It's her character arc that we somewhat started in Suicide Squad and all that shit, because that technically is still happened before this film, and then is her whole movie that her entire attire actually changed to now we have this, and even her tattoos and all this stuff is changing. So I do hear you on that, and I'm somewhat glad. I the love story in the movie was a little weird. I was like, what's happening? And then the fact that she killed him so goddamn quickly, I did not see that coming. I was like laughing. I was like, what just happened? And then the reason she gave for that was actually really heartening in a great way. I was like, oh man, good for you. That's exciting. But this movie is pulling from what the other films has already established in a smart way, right?
I think what they do with Harley here is amazing, because she's basically an unsympathetic sociopath, whereas in the previous movies they try to get you to empathize with her situation. But to make Harley shine, you gotta unhinge her and unleash her, and that's what they did in this movie.
I guess I just hated her costume from the first Suicide Squad. So and like you know, you could have done a like you mentioned, have that arc. Yes, I know that the arc. I'm like literally just the costume design. You probably didn't need to go the way they did in that, because she looked dumb.
Louis, it's funny that you mentioned, of all things, the Daddy's Little Monster reference, because that was one of the few tattoos that were visible on her in this movie, was the Daddy's Little Monster one.
I thought that one was changed.
No, so
it
you
was,
can see it.
It was changed.
I think it says no one's little monster.
Yeah, no, and that's like not owned by anyone. Yeah. There's a couple of one that you're talking about. There's one in her back that said property of. Well, the one in her back said property to Joker, and then she says property by and owned by no one. But the one I think Mocha's talking about. Oh, which one are you talking about?
The one that's on her chest.
Yeah, that's
above her heart.
I think they changed that one too, is what I'm saying. I don't know. I don't think it's Daddy's Little Monster anymore, though.
It said Daddy's Little M.O., and then the rest was covered by the strap of her wedding dress or her gown that she was wearing. You see it? Can you see it in the scene where she leaves the that building slaughter scene and comes out and finds Rick Flag and says, "What are you doing?" In that scene where she's talking to him, you see it right there on her chest.
So, Bratlin, what else you got?
Yeah, I would say one other thing I wanted to mention was, I mean, with the humor and the action going on here, you also got a lot of heart, especially from Ratcatcher 2 and her relationship with her dad. And we'll get this nice story about, even though he was pretty much a fuck up, but he was a genius fuck up, just didn't know how to put all the pieces together to have quote unquote a normal life. That he never had, he always loved his daughter unconditionally and everything. And I think it sets up a really nice like play for Bloodsport to kind of think about, like, all right, what does it mean to like be responsible for others? Because I mean, with Bloodsport, they kind of fix their Deadshot issue that they had in the first Suicide Squad, which was like, yeah, this is a lethal serial killer, but he has nothing but the utmost of love for his daughter and stuff. And I think what they did with Bloodsport and having him just have a zero like sympathetic relationship with his daughter at the beginning. I mean, Idris Elba was hilarious in that, but also it was just like kind of makes him an unredeemable soul, which is what you need to go into a hellhole like Corto Maltese in this place. And it's really cool that at the end, I mean, it's not like he's trying to do something good, but what I love is there is a lot of heart here and kind of heart surrounding him, where especially with Ratcatcher 2, we get this one last scene where this is like 5 seconds we hear Taika Waititi talk, and it just brings the heart all together and makes the ending work for me that... Yeah, like Ratcatcher 2 makes all the rats of Corto Maltese take over Starro and take down Starro. And the reason why. And this whole parable about why rats, because they are the basically scum of the earth. If they have a reason to live, so should we all. It just hit all the right notes to make that ending stick with me.
I was somewhat surprised. Sorry, I was doing some research here. I was somewhat surprised. I didn't know that I was going to like this character as much as I did. And then I'm trying to figure out, I'm like, it felt like this character didn't belong, didn't quite fit with his group, but also somewhat did. But it was also nice because I was like watching something and I was like, oh yeah, I do agree that she is like the emotional element of this film of like, bringing this band together while still cracking jokes about sleeping and being a millennial. I think that's technically more John Cena than her. But I did think that was actually kind of funny. And also the sweet and sort of kind moment. I was also curious, sweet and kind moment of like, why that, you know, he chose rats, for example, but I was also sort of curious if they were adding this, daughter character as a way as motivation for his name's not Deadshot. What's his name in this film?
Bloodsport.
So I thought it was cool though. It was nice to sort of see that, you know, ultimately she's the one that saves everybody, which was really sad for Starro. But yeah.
I just jumping back again. The scene in the prison I thought was phenomenal. I kind of couldn't believe that, you know, you have Idris Elba and Storm Reed. And like, that was just good. I was expecting some nonsense, whatever, who cares subplot, but the two of them knocked that scene out of the park and kind of set the, like the more serious tone that you kind of needed to go through the Ratcatcher story. You know, if it was just jokes and jokes and jokes, and then you try to pull that off at the end. I thought that they did a great job of peppering in those like actual serious moments to ground this film.
Yeah. Yeah, like even like when Peacemaker kills Rick Flag, that becomes a very serious, like gruesome scene. And You see Cena, like, I mean, even though he's been cracking up to this point, he has a mission that he literally lives by that code. He will kill any man, woman, or child for justice and liberty. And Waller gave him a piece of justice to work towards, and he will kill anybody for it. And there's also that very serious, twisted part to it. And I think that's what's really cool about this movie. It knows how to balance all those pieces that it could easily just kind of fall on its face with.
Also just love how, and sorry, Boca, just like going from that point, I love how they literally go, I don't give a shit. I'm going to name a character that is from the United States that is clearly doing a weird Captain America, pro-America, go and just kill a hell of a lot of fucking people for the sake of freedom. And then the whole plot of the movie is how shitty America is because of all the diabolical shit that they're doing. Everything about that. I said, that's like, anybody can do that. It's like so ballsy to do it. Yeah. And the, you know, 70% of the movie, we're sitting there sort of laughing about this dude's America and it's kind of the opposite. And then in the end, when he's doing some really fucked up shit, it's like, well, you were laughing at that earlier. Why aren't you laughing now? You should be already used to it. I love that brilliant sort of storytelling and how the characters can shift and really kind of sets you almost at, you know, an unease when they sort of reveal that this was an American operation in the first place. So I thought that was actually a really cool sort of revealing moment. And especially the creators and James Gunn to just go and tell the story. So kudos to them for not holding back as much.
I was going to say that. I agree with you guys on the Peacemaker being a super interesting character. And, you know, James Gunn got the green light for the Peacemaker TV show well before this movie released. They've already been filming it. And I remember hearing about that and being like, man, this movie is, I know he's attempting to like rehabilitate the Suicide Squad, but the first Suicide Squad was really shitty. And it seems like they're pulling the trigger way too early to give one of the characters from this movie their own TV show. And no, after watching this movie, I'm completely bought in. I'm so ready for Peacemaker TV show where he's just an anti-hero doing really horrible things in the name of peace and justice, while also being his funny John Cena self.
Even the support team from Task Force X, they're absolute assholes, and they have to be.
Oh yeah,
that's kind of a bummer.
I'm sure the Peacemaker show is going to be the Suicide Squad, the TV show.
That's kind of a bummer. I didn't know that was green lit before the movie.
It was green lit before the movie was finished.
I mean, the show comes out in 3 months. It comes out in January.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
4 months. What month? Well,
by the time this comes out,
we're in July.
4.5 months.
Feb-tober.
Wait, what? January or next month? Which is it?
I know. I was saying that when this podcast finally comes out, it could be coming out next month.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
Tomorrow.
Makes sense. Exactly.
You'll get our last call in 7 months from now. But yeah, no, I could see this. Because I think James Gunn wrote the first two or three episodes. It's a short series. I think it's only like six, but he wrote the first couple. So yeah, I could see that being a pretty immediate tonal tie-in, you know, if you will, before it kind of branches and maybe finds its own unique leg to stand on.
Mm.
I like those two, the two assistants for Task Force X. I thought they were pretty funny characters the entire time.
Just like how they're betting on who's going to die first.
Yeah, love that
scene. Big Kevin in the Woods vibes from those characters.
Yeah, and they're assholes too, but they're just the level below Amanda Waller where they can just say, hey, hold on, let's not kill everybody else just because they're not doing what you want them to do,
Waller. Yeah, Amanda Waller is a fucking psycho. I love her for it, but she
love. I definitely want to say some words on Amanda Waller here.
That look she gives them at the end of the movie when she has the ice pack on her head. My mom is giving me the exact same look while acting up at like someone else's house when we're supposed to be behaving as kids. Oh, that kills the blood.
It's a death stare. Yeah,
loved it. Brylan, what else you got?
Last thing I wanted to add was, we know, like, with a lot of James Gunn's recent films, there's been like a very memorable soundtrack with it, especially with the Guardians films, and Suicide Squad also has its own soundtrack. And For me personally, this is probably my favorite one from a James Gunn movie. I mean, how awesome is it to open a movie with Johnny Cash and Folsom Prison Blues? I mean, that just got me as soon as I started hearing that song. I was just sold in, and I thought every single song in here just kind of fit its moment really well. So I like that these songs aren't just like the hits like you have on the Guardians of the Galaxy, that there's a little lot more that you can discover here as well.
Man, I gotta disagree, because when he did that, those songs were not hits. And I feel like the success of that movie
James Gunn
made those songs hits.
I mean, there are some songs in there that weren't hits, but there are some that are just like, you know, standards that you would hear. Like,
I don't
your parents' record.
I don't know, man. Fair, like Folsom, those.
I mean, Folsom Prison Blues, definitely a very
popular, every prison very scene ever.
Very obvious way. But there were some really cool songs in here that I haven't heard before that I just started digging, and it just set the mood right for me.
I was getting kind of going from there. I just got to disagree with you, but I hear what you're saying. I do have to disagree, because the movie that the DC film that this reminded me of is that we just saw Justice League, and I'm like, oh my god, this is like,
hey, you didn't get Leonard Cohen in here.
Yeah, but it was, I was like, oh bro, I was waiting, please don't play Hallelujah, and if you do, just make a joke about it or something, I don't know. But it felt like it was too much music, and he was trying to do too much, similar than what he'd done in the other two Guardians films, and when they sort of tried to do in Infinity War and Endgame. And I'm like, we felt like we went back to that well already. Like, I don't quite need that. I like the use of title cards and the use of the way that he was telling the story that in a non-linear story fashion. I thought that was actually pretty cool, because we haven't seen that a lot, even those really big, I think somebody said Scott Pilgrim, like, title at the end. I think that was actually awesome, because that's the only movie I've seen it like that. But the music was just like, man, I don't care about these songs. I don't even know. Like, I don't know about these songs. I just kind of want to do something a little bit different. So I'm just surprised you said that this is your favorite one, and that Guardians, although I was like, I haven't heard those songs, but like, they immediately.
It's definitely better than Volume 2.
I love Mr. Blue Sky, so I don't know. We'll see. That song was insane. Like that jammed to that for now.
It's solid. It's all right.
So let's go over to Mocha. Let's see what you got for the actings and character.
Yeah. I don't know. A lot of what I was considering has already been said. But like, one thing I want to point out is that I think that Starro was surprisingly well executed. I was excited when I found out that Starro was going to be in this movie. But also I was concerned, just because it seemed like they were doing a lot, and they were, you know, before going to see this movie, it looks like there's a cast of 15 heroes, doing all sorts of stuff. And then also a giant kaiju starfish from space. And I didn't think they were going to be able to work it in well, but surprisingly they did. Each story beat led well to the next part, as it escalated. With like really like enjoyable consistency until the point where we had this kaiju battle in the streets of Corte Maltese, and like Starro and his zombies were, I think the zombies were actually pretty creepy. I wish they did more with the zombies. Like, I wish the zombies were way more violent and aggressive about chasing the Suicide Squad members. Like maybe even leave a few more to survive
me think,
the end scene, just that way they can be taken out by, you know, the hordes of starfish zombies.
Makes me think James Gunn should have done Last of Us. Or maybe you made it too hilarious.
No, that's
not really tone. A series that has a room for love.
Yeah. What I liked about Starro is, I mean, a lot of times when they do like a big fantastical CG character, it can look just like out of place, but it actually felt pretty well in place here. And the small starfish shooting out of the sides, it was juicy enough. It didn't get too crazy with how gory it was, but it was gory enough to make it like have that weird alien feel to it.
I don't know. It was kind of gory when they pierced through his eyes and then his body was eaten from the inside out by rats. I thought that was
That was crazy.
Well, even before that, I love the tension that he was building. Like, we only saw Starro somewhat grow a little bit in the videotape and then it cuts away. And so I was like, oh, cool. And so in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, how fucking big is this thing now? And they never actually showed it, right? But then you get a similar sense of like tension building, similar to Alien, where there's a shot when right before Flag and Peacemaker starts fighting, that there's a shot of just like one long hallway, right? And it's like all bars. And you see all these drones or all these like Staros, like body hosts, just all around. And there's like hundreds of them there. And then you see this sort of water tank and you see the little fucking thing goes over. You're like, oh my God, that thing is gigantic. I love that. That definitely was like taking from many other sci-fis, but I love somehow he like injected some weird horror, scary elements into this film that he didn't even need to do. I thought that was actually really, really well done to sort of incorporate
that. That's his start though. Like if you watch Slither, like, that's where you got it from.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not just Icky, Slither. There's many other ones here. Specifically, that's why I said Alien, because looking at that one line when you see the alien, you can only see the one shot of the camera. I'm like, that, I think that's even before Slither, is what I'm saying.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and I was really surprised that he actually got me to care for this character with just one line. And it was a beautifully written line at the end where he's hearing Staros' thoughts or his words. And the last thing he says is, I was floating peacefully looking at the stars.
So
and
sad.
It's like, it was like just
totally ran into America. It
brought all this gravitas to this character that was just a zombifying monster for the entire hour and 55 minutes before the line was delivered.
Welcome to America,
Star. So Mocha, I do like that point what you were talking about of making the zombies more aggressive, but then that's why that line worked for me so well, because Starro's aliens actually were not hurting anybody. Now, were they taking people over? Yes, but I felt like that being was not actually killing or trying to actually cause any other sort of destruction besides of what he normally does. And I think the only thing he knows it does is like take over other hosts. So when he got that line and he was just trying to be sort of peaceful, that's why it worked for me. We didn't see these zombies trying to sort of kill. Then they were trying to disarm and stuff like that, but not actually trying to kill. I thought that worked really well for me.
Yeah. Speaking of like getting worked up by really simple lines, I was surprisingly worked up by, and Brian, you said it earlier, but by Ratcatcher 1's line to young Ratcatcher 2. Before she was Ratcatcher 2, about, you know, rats being the lowest among us. Like, I don't know, man. Yeah. Gunn has a real way with writing lines that just like are daggers straight into your heart. You see it all the time with, like, we see it in all the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. There's always at least one or two lines in there that just get you. And this movie has several good moments for me.
And I can't say anybody but Taika like delivering that line the way it was done.
Because he has that goofy voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I thought that Idris Elba's Bloodsport was a way better leading man than Joel Kinnaman's Jack Flag. Like, I like Joel Kinnaman. Jack Flag. But
Rick Flag.
Rick Flag.
Rick Flag. Sorry. Jack Flag is from something else. Anyway. Yeah. Rick Flag. I like Joel Kinnaman's Rick Flag plenty. But Idris Elba was a better lead for that. Not just that. Not just for the movie, but for like that group, the group itself, like the Suicide Squad. Like, it makes more sense.
Idris Elba has the best "I'm tired of this shit" face.
It makes more sense to have a villain actively leading that group than Rick Flag, who was just, you know, like a flunky of the military.
That's not how the first one was. Like, the first one was Deadshot.
It was Rick Flag, though.
It was
Rick Flag. Then it transitioned.
Yeah.
So, and that's the one point that I was almost like, I understand both movies exist. Like, this is technically a sequel, but the character of Rick Flag from the first film and like this kid Rick Flag is two different characters entirely.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it's kind of a bummer because, and I know Blue alluded to this, and we'll hopefully talk about it in a moment, but it seems as though there was like a weird, like gigantic shift of his character, and Joel Kinnaman himself seems to be enjoying this film. And it's just the stuff, and clearly the writing and everything that they kind of give him. Also, they don't really give him a hell of a lot to do, and he's just somewhat of a supporting character. So that's what's really kind of big and kind of frustrating, because it's like, man, like, I like Joel Kinnaman as an actor. I felt like if we would have gotten at least half or part of this in the first film, that movie wouldn't have been as bad. But it's just weird, like, we get such a big shift and then the character dies in this movie. It's like, oh man, like, I kind of like this weird kind of fun character kind of playing off these other crazy individuals. It felt like he was the only sane one. Along with Milton, I felt like he was the only sane one
Milton
here.
Milton was absolutely insane.
Yeah, right. Milton was crazy. That's what, with flip flops with socks on. That's
God, I love that. That was such a nice beat. But yeah, I liked him to keep this somewhat grounded. That they killed him off, and it was a little bit of a bummer.
So go ahead.
Well, all I was gonna say was that I had a hard time to sort of coming to terms with. The heel turn that Rick Flag had in this movie, because it just seemed to come out of nowhere. And like you said, it didn't feel like it was kind of the same character from the first. But then I kind of justified it for myself, at least, by saying that, okay, between that first movie, the first movie was the first Suicide Squad possible ever. And then at this point, the program is very well developed, the point where like everybody who's participating knows what's up. They're in it. They don't have to be like talked into it. And so I just assume that there's just been a lot of secret missions that he's gone on already and has already been disillusioned with his status.
Rick's supposed to be Waller's guy in the field.
Yeah, and it's not direct enough, but that was just how I filled in that gap for myself.
So I'm more with Warren on this one. I think there was a scene missing from Birds of Prey with Rick Flag in it. I think you could have done, because that's what I was alluding to earlier. So I'm torn on this movie on whether I like or dislike the fact that, like, when does it take place? We know it takes place after Suicide Squad 1, but like realistically, kind of like, when does that happen? Because we don't really know when Suicide 1 super takes place either, right?
Sometime before
Batman versus Superman, right?
The Jack Snyder, what do you call it?
Jack Snyder?
Super Friends movie. What is it called? Zack Snyder. Oh my God, I'm all over the place today.
Yeah. Who is these Jacks you talking about?
Jack Black is actually a Marvel character. And I got
Steve Kinnaman.
So
Jack Kinnaman.
So I'm not sure. Like, I did like the separation that it had, that it kind of could tell its own tale and, you know, basically they just had the one Superman reference just to like give Bloodsport some credence, right? But on the other hand, like, there was a bunch in there that could have been kind of tied through as a through line of like, oh, when does this happen? Is this in the gap when Superman's out and Batman's, you know, mourning his friend's loss, essentially? Like, is that why they're involved? Like, I would have loved to have a little bit more to do there. And I think you could have solved a little bit of that with Flag showing up in Birds of Prey, kind of explaining that. And then potentially using him as like a through line for, like, you know, again, because the Birds of Prey are still out there. Harley Quinn's still out there. The Suicide Squad's still out there. And the Justice League. And you can kind of use those characters to tie everyone together because they have those connections to both of them. So I'm not sure. How do y'all feel about like the universe building that this film either did or did not do?
Yeah, I guess for me, it felt like they didn't seem to like. This movie clearly was in this universe, in the same universe as it was already sort of established. They didn't do enough to allow us to know that and sort of give us a little bit more pieces so we can sort of put the puzzle pieces together, besides just putting in the same characters from the first film. Like, I felt like they definitely needed to do more Blood, and whether it's a scroll or something, right? Like, I think that would have been fine. I do think, and I don't want to rewatch this movie, but I do think Amanda Waller's character does explain this in the first film of where it takes place. So technically, if this is after that, it is going to be established a little bit better. I just don't remember. There's a hell of a lot of dumbass dialogue when they were sitting down eating dinner in that scene. So I think it does sort of frame this up a little bit better. But I think this movie, if we're talking about a standalone, and it's not, they could have at least hinted at a little bit more information so that we can properly sort of apply where this is going to go. Because this is after Birds of Prey, right? Yeah. So if this is after Birds of Prey, Harley Quinn also has a crew working on in that as well. So she's back in jail now after that. Like, there's a lot of stuff.
This crap actually makes no sense, because it wasn't the original Suicide Squad put together to take down Superman. In like, I'm trying to remember that, that film. I thought that was what Waller's thing was, that like, well, what if Superman goes rogue? We need like some people that will do like the dirty work. And so that would put it before
I don't
Batman
think they
Superman.
Made this film with trying to make it fit into that whatever existing Suicide Squad universe there is. I mean, I think also like that's one of the business decisions that DCEU made, was like they were going to treat all their movies as one-offs, but you'll have the obvious sequels to the obvious like movies that are hits.
No, this is a sequel to that film, and precisely from that one.
What he's saying is that like there's not going to be
they're not worrying about cohesion
towards that. I guess maybe that's the thing. Like
that, like you're getting an all-star. You're looking at an all-star comic book issue every single film. It's a one-shot story,
right? That just vaguely takes place in the same universe.
Yeah.
I guess it's a bummer, though, because I felt like it would have probably been better if they would have used what they already had to make it fit, but not rewrite and sort of destroy it. I don't know. I don't really have too many issues. It seems like you may have some issues with the Blu-ray. I do feel like, though, because like, where is the connective tissue? You may as well use it if you're going to come up with this brand new film, but still use existing characters that we already have now a lot of history with. You may as well keep going after it. I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's just like, it might just be their business decision to keep them separated. It just, to me, there was things that I've seen Marvel do where they have one-off scenes in a preceding movie that set up the characterization in the anteceding movie. And yeah. I think specifically Harley Quinn and Rick Flagg needed a couple scenes to set them up a little bit better. And then also you could use those scenes with Rick Flagg to set up his change in characterization in this film better. And the audience wouldn't be as like, wait, is that the same guy? Like, because at least, and so I was going to say this earlier, they did a great job of just killing people. Like, who cares? It doesn't matter almost who you are. You're going to get murked, you know?
Yeah, I didn't know what Mongal's plan was, but she just jumped on that helicopter and things went south.
But like Captain Boomerang, it's like, who cares if he was a different character in the 3 seconds that we saw him before he died? You know, like,
the same actor.
No, I know, but no, that's what I mean. But like, if his characterization, excuse me, was different, like he would probably have slight differences, and no one cares because you didn't spend enough time with him. Whereas Flag, you spent enough time with him that it was noticeable that he was a different human being.
Having Boomerang in that first Storming of the Beach was great, because I loved the misdirection in this opening, in the opening pre-title card scene. I thought it was fantastic, because I had no reason to think that all of them were going to die there and then. I knew that they were all going to die sooner or later. Like, the tagline for this movie going into it was don't get too attached. I just didn't know he was going to do it all at once, and it was delightful. It was an absolutely delightful opening. James Gunn is so good at giving us really incredibly fun, memorable scenes before dropping the title card for his movie. And this is just like a perfect example of that. It was great seeing them all get murdered so violently. And specifically Boomerang being in there too, just added to that misdirection, because he was one of the main characters. So we had no reason to think that they were all going to die there, let alone him die first.
Right.
Well, I guess second after Blackguard. By getting like completely chopped to bits by a helicopter blade.
Yeah.
And Jai I'm Courtney, so he was like his like Boomerang like lit up, and he's like a somewhat of a famous actor still. Like I laughed so hard at that moment, because I did not expect that to happen that violently. Even Pete Davidson like faced me and blown off. So goddamn funny.
I'm glad he was the first one to die, because I don't know if I could have tolerated a whole movie with Pete Davidson in it.
I think that was the joke. I think James Gunn knows that no one could tolerate a whole superhero movie with Pete Davidson. He trolled us all by casting him and then killing him right away.
You want to know how he got the yes for the movie from Davidson? You know what his character's nickname is? Or like real life, you know, aliases? Dick Blackguard's Hurts. Real last yeah. Dick, and Davidson Richard apparently figured, like, found that out, and he's like, I am absolutely doing this. Which is like, that's pretty funny. I'm not gonna lie. Like, I respect that.
I think everything from my component has been talked about. I'll mention one thing in our MVP section, but Blewett, do you have anything else that you want to add?
Yeah, so just as going back, apparently it is after Superman's death for the original Suicide Squad. Apparently it's because Superman is gone, who is going to take care of, like, these otherworldly threats?
The way I thought you said that was they hired the Suicide Squad to take out Superman, and I'm like,
think that might be the plot of the upcoming Suicide Squad video game. So
spoilers, goddammit.
Yep, we told you.
No, you didn't. We didn't say video games.
Oh, but we said the Suicide Squad. That is,
you can't spoil video games.
You can't spoil video games,
Brian. Because you haven't played it yet.
Yeah, you can easily spoil video games if you've never.
That's the same.
If you've never played.
Stop. He's trolling.
Yeah, he's trolling. Keep going.
Cool. I guess the only thing, and maybe this is another discussion, is I guess, how do we feel about Gunn basically just, like, repeating all of the story beats from Guardians of the Galaxy? And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but it's one of those observations of, like, what's the next film he's gonna do be like? Like, obviously he's doing Guardians 3, you know, so that's fine. If he repeats the story beats from the first two, cool, that works. But I think there was a lot of crossover, and to me, it did kind of feel like, oh, maybe he had half of the script written for Guardians 3 and then got fired and then took a bunch of it and put it over to Suicide Squad.
I can see that.
And I just don't want James Gunn, because I think he is creative enough to get locked in kind of that.
I don't know. I feel like if you're talking specifically from Bloodsport's point of view, right?
Well, Bloodsport, then even Ratcatcher, you know, that was a very similar relationship.
I think the humor obviously
was the exact same.
Yeah, you know, I mean, like, I think James Gunn has a style and he knows what, I mean, he enjoys. And I also think, yeah, I mean, definitely shares the same DNA because it's a James Gunn film. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, I mean, given him having the, like, a little bit more the rated R rating to play around with characters a bit more did make it feel a bit more freer, I think. And just kind of more my vibe of a movie compared to Guardians.
I do feel like, though, it was like, this is not a new beat, Blewett. I think because it's a James Gunn that we're going to ultimately look back at some of his most recent work and says, ooh, you've used these beats before. But I also think if you take out James Gunn, you put in another director, we're going to be saying, ooh, this movie feels like another superhero film we've seen already. And so I'm not knocking him for that. Like, I think we've clearly seen, and even in the other Suicide film, we've clearly seen an assassin who's doing work for his daughter, and he's, you know, stuck on doing there. We've seen this character that has, you know, a longing relationship with their father or some sort of parental figure, and there's some sort of a strain. In this case, it was a really great sort of relationship. We've seen the fish out of water sort of scenario, sort of a story here. So I think these beats, these themes and motifs, we've clearly seen in many, many other films. So I'm not knocking it for that. I'm glad we actually finally got a chance to see it in the DC universe, though. Like, this is something that Marvel and other ones have done a heck of a lot on. And so I do see what you're talking about. It is very, very similar to Guardians, but also Guardians is very similar to other films that we've seen before it. So
I don't know. I'm not to mind it. Hang on. I just want to directly respond to that one, and then Mark, I'll let you go. So I don't know. When Guardians 1 came out, and I guess I'll pose this question to you, Bryland. When Guardians 1 came out, we were all losing our minds on how refreshing that film was compared to others in the genre. And so I'll ask you this, Bryland. You said this movie was more your beat. Is this a better film than Guardians 1?
I would say it's right up there. I would definitely
No. Is this a better film than Guardians 1? because you said it was more your style. I'm saying it's derivative, and so that knocks it down a bunch of pegs.
I mean, derivative doesn't necessarily knock it down.
I'm saying, in my opinion, it knocks it down.
I mean, if it does for you.
I enjoy this movie. Let me, I guess.
Yeah,
let,
I'm yeah. Not, I'm I mean, not,
but
it, I it, I would say like I enjoyed Guardians this 3. Just as much as the Guardians 1. I mean, I definitely would watch this before Guardians 2 again.
That might be fair. I'll give you that one. No. But Guardian, yeah.
I think Guardians 2 just has too much, you know.
Mocha,
it's too much movie.
Yeah, so I think that the line earlier, one of the lines that was used was, is James Gunn getting like painted into a corner or sort of like pigeonholed in this style of movie? And I don't think that that's the case. I don't think he's being like typecast for directing these type of movies. I think that James Gunn has a few lanes that he's very, very good in. And this is a very specific lane that no one else is at his level at, which is taking a large ensemble and quickly and effectively getting the audience to fall in love with them, while still delivering on character beats for all of them and within the length of a normal feature length film. I think that that's incredibly difficult. And I feel like we've seen so many people fail, and James Gunn has a unique talent for this type of movie. So I think that it's less that he's getting typecast for it, but rather that he's the best person for the job for this kind of movie. Now, that being said,
it's kind of telling, like, I mean, he's part of the team that made the original Dawn of the Dead. We just recently saw, written and directed by Zack Snyder, Army of the Dead. And so if you look back at that movie, how like better would it have been if James Gunn directed?
Oh, we all said that it would be Army in that review. Dead. Check out that review if you haven't, by the way.
I mean, did we all say James Gunn would have been the better director?
Yeah.
I believe so.
Now that all that being said, I do think that this movie was different enough from Guardians of the Galaxy, in terms of like the feel of the characters and the character relationships, in a way that I think was very necessary for the DCEU. The DCEU needed this movie so badly. It needed a movie of this type, and it needed this movie to feel at least a bit different than Guardians. And I think he did deliver on that. Though I do think that the Guardians movies are, at the very least one, I would argue two, are objectively better than this movie. But I'm not saying this movie is bad. I just think that style-wise, I think he was a better job with Guardians.
Right.
But you can tell that, you know, he took the opportunity to be like, oh, this is an R-rated film and I get to kill a lot of people. Cool. I'm going to like play along those lines.
Yeah, I'm going to have a lot of fun with it.
But I do think that this is, I do think that this is a lane that James Gunn can do uniquely powerful things with compared to anybody else who's in the industry right now.
This is a no contest of which film is better for me. It's clearly Guardians 1 and 2, but that's right. Okay, so let's move into our MVPs. Who do we think won the film, Blewett?
Yeah, we haven't talked about him much, but Polka Dot Man, David, not going to pronounce it.
Demolition.
Yeah, he was like unhinged, but like kind of, you could empathize with him, you know? Mm-hmm. And his power set was stupid and goofy and not really explained too well, which I think actually worked. he played a really good weirdo. That one scene that we talked about earlier with Milton getting, you know, knocked out of the living was awesome. Just like, it was the most emotion he really showed that whole film, and just seeing him lose it over this guy Milton, which again, you know, kind of was calling out the audience on that, of how many nameless goons have we seen get smoked in any one of these films. And, you know, here's this guy that's actually standing up for a nameless goon. Well, he had a name. It was Milton.
Which one of Polka Dot Man's giant mothers did you think was the scariest? The giant mother or the mothers he was dancing with?
It was probably when they put the glasses on the rat, Sebastian.
Yes, the Sebastian rat was the Sebastian mother was hilarious.
Yeah, that or King Shark. King Shark, you know.
Oh, as the mother, yes.
Chasing after the butterfly was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Mocha, MVP.
So my MVP isn't the most valuable, isn't like the best character, but I do think it was the most valuable for the movie, and that's the Javelin. Short-lived run, but without his cryptic last words to Harley Quinn, they never would have been able to defeat Starro, because those rats needed an entry point into that eyeball,
and the javelin's javelin was the only thing that could get through. So I got to give a shout out to our German Olympic athlete turned criminal for no reason in the canon hero.
Yeah, mine's going to be, we talked a little bit about her, but Viola Davis is crushing every goddamn scene she's doing in this film. She is playing a great villain, this character who doesn't give a shit. There's like a moment that she's like screaming at Bloodsport's character, like spit coming from her mouth. She's like completely out of her fucking mind and just like going for it. And I can feel that. This is a very another similar thing with Joel Kinnaman's character. Like, I can feel that, man, she's actually playing a very somewhat or similar role that she's played in the first film that just did not work. And now this film comes up and everything she's doing is working in this film. And I love the point in her first film when she just straight up kills almost everybody in the FBI in that room so that information doesn't get out. And I'm like, I don't know whose character this is supposed to be, but I love what she's doing. And I'm so glad she got hit in the head with that golf club. That was fucking amazing. and she's alive. Like that look that Mocha was talking about was absolutely perfect at the end of this film, sort of like punishing somebody for hitting her that hard with a goddamn golf club. So yeah, Viola Davis was, please, I need more of her every time.
She's similar to Rick Flagg in that regard, and I feel like whatever happened between the first Suicide Squad and the Suicide Squad, whatever happened during that time period changed her and made her even worse than what she was, because she was willing to do anything to accomplish to get make sure the job was done in the first movie, but she was much more controlled and in the face of what was a much more like threatening situation, I feel like, in terms of the villain of the original Suicide Squad. So like, again, I'm with you on this, Blewett. Like, some stuff went down in those years that we've seen them going on these missions that pushed both her and Rick to the edge. And I wish we knew what that was.
No.
Blewett. Brylan, who's your MVP?
Yeah, it has to be John Cena as Peacemaker. I mean, just taking who's supposed to be ultra badass, pro American, super macho 80s style action hero and making him a total dick. I mean, it's great to just kind of throw it back in the face of, especially like a lot of idiots trying to represent patriotism in absolutely the worst ways possible right now. It's good to see a character that just shows how utterly stupid that is when you take it as like something that's that you live and breathe with. I mean, it's great to see this character. He's absolutely hilarious. He's also menacing in it. And also, there's one other thing I wanted to add, and I totally forgot it. Well, crap. I would say, like, it's amazing to see how far John Cena has grown as an actor, and this makes me want to see him in more things. You know, I mean, it's got that same Drax effect for it.
Yeah, I feel like I need a movie with John Cena, The Rock, and Batista. Like, at one point, they all have had some solid performances in their own films with other people, but together, I haven't seen them all in one movie together, and now I feel like I need to see it, so make it happen.
Yeah. I would have loved to have gotten John Cena in the MCU, and I know actors can play in both, I'm happy with him just being Peacemaker and him, you know, being like a big driving point for the DCEU moving forward.
It'll be interesting to see if this is going to somewhat clash up or link up with Black Adam at some point. So, who knows? We'll see. So, let's get into our conclusions, recommendations, and anything else that we got before we wrap it up. So, Brylan, what you got for your lasting thoughts?
This was an absolute fun ride of a film. I mean, everything was just enjoyable. It was hilarious. It was thoughtful. And it's James Gunn doing what he does best. And it definitely shows that he's become skilled at making these big, fun team movies. And he should just continue doing similar movies. So I'm sure Guardians Volume 3, I'm not going to say, oh, it's definitely going to be a very good James Gunn movie right now. That's the cool thing about it is there's some magic here where it's like, oh, this ain't a standard movie. I want to see how James Gunn approaches the next story that he tells too. I mean, because he has a very creative eye and creative talent.
Blewett, what you got?
Yeah, you know, I generally like this film. I think it had a little bit for everyone. I don't think it truly shined in one place, though. That being said, I think it's a very approachable movie as long as you're over the age of 17 or have parental consent to see this film. Speaking of which, I think that it did prove that rated R superhero films can still work following the Marvel formula. You know, again, ultimately, this thing is a Marvel formula film, right? DC tried to be different, and they tried to go all grayscale on us and, you know, doing like the Justice League and stuff. But like, this is a Marvel film. And I think it proved that there could be interest there. The only problem is the box office numbers. Right now, it's made less than $100 million. I mean, granted, we don't know what the impact is on HBO Max's subscription service. So, you know, that's hard to tell. But, you know, with the new Delta variant coming out and folks, you know, not super excited to go back to the theaters again. We had a nice month, right? July was great. You know, and now it's a little bit more serious again. I have this gut feeling that, you know, when it comes to greenlighting Deadpool 3, and, you know, saying you can do an R version of that and saying you can do, I don't know, like a true, oh my gosh, what's the it's the one there's, he has like an all white cape.
Moon Knight.
Yes. Doing an R, yes. Doing an R rated, Moon Knight, you know, like a true R rated Moon Knight. I just don't know if Marvel is going to look at those numbers from DC and say, yep, that will work. So that's my concern there.
Yeah. It's interesting because you mentioned the box office numbers because, you know, Black Widow also opened to lesser box office numbers than it would have in non-COVID times, but that had an opening weekend of like $80 million and had made like $136 million worldwide, but has so far. Whereas this movie's only did 26 on its opening weekend, and that's super low for a film like this.
But also, cases are way higher right now than when Black Widow came out. That's what I'm saying, is that like,
not, I mean, yes, but Delta variant was still a thing 3 or 4 weeks
ago. Black Widow might have caused the spikes.
Yeah, everyone knows. No, but like, I'm just saying, like, there's mask mandates that have come out in the last like week or so where they didn't, you know, like the Delta variant was around then, but like for the most part, we were still in the opening phase of the open and close. We're in the we're clopening essentially. Black Widow came out in that like 4 hour stretch that you had to sleep between coming back to work again.
Mocha, conclusions, lasting thoughts.
Yeah, I thought this was great. It was a lot of fun. Really, really enjoyable movie. It was a proper version of a Task Force X film. I feel like it was better than Ayers in almost every way. You know, I'm not gonna shit too much on David Ayer moving forward, just because we saw, at least I saw, that there's something to be said for the idea of a director's proper cut and how that could get mangled by a studio. Like we saw that with Zack Snyder. I was doubtful about that one. The Snyder cut was an objectively better movie than the original theatrical cut, despite it still being a bad movie, but it was still better. So maybe there's a better Ayer film out there, but this movie was better than it in almost every way. It's also more of what the DCEU desperately needs. Assume a base of knowledge from the audience. Don't over-explain things. Just dive right into some fun and some violence and let things happen. Let the characters kind of come to life. And the DCEU desperately needs to do that a bit more with their movies as they come out. But yeah, you should definitely watch this on HBO Max if you haven't seen it yet. For sure, check it out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to probably pretty much agree with everybody. I thought the movie was okay. I thought it was, I enjoyed it. There's a lot of like surprising elements to it, but it's not sort of groundbreaking. But it's nice that it's streaming and being able to go into theater. So definitely sort of check it out. I do agree with you, Blewett, that it's kind of a bummer. I would love to see more R-rated things as well, but I do feel like it's a little bit more catered to PG-13 superhero-esque in this. But we'll see, you know, what sort of happens. I don't think the violence was, for me, I don't think the violence is all needed as it was in this film, but I'm glad it was there. So that's pretty cool. And with that, we have been the Down in Front Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks so much for joining. Blewett, where can people find more of your work on the interwebs? And what do you got going for us?
Yeah, you can check us out at My News Music and My News Band on most major platforms. And then, of course, you can check out our web series called Jesse Plays With His Javelin. that is on Vimeo.
Variously types Vimeo.com.
Mocha, where can people find more of your work on the interweb?
Yeah. You know, if you want to find videos of me posing nude on the beach with a starfish on my face, you can find that on Twitter at Mocha Mike LI, as the Lord intended. Unfortunately, you cannot find me at Mocha Mike. The person who has that username is stuck in his home, picturing his mother's face on the cockroaches that run rampant in his disgusting one bedroom apartment. So until I can get that the password from him, it's Mocha Mike LI. However, on Instagram, you can find me at Mocha Mike, where I post my photography work. So go check it out.
And Brylundo, what you got for us?
Oh, I'm coming in last this time. That's cool. You can find me, everything I retweet, I actually send by rat to everybody that follows me on Twitter at Brylund, B-R-I-L-U-N-D. You can also find me posting many movie reviews and TV reviews, all sorts of wonderful things on my Instagram account, which is I Am Brylund. I recently put up a review of The Green Knight. Go check it out. Leave a reply. Let me know what you think about it.
And you're not quite last. We are always going to be last. Check out more of our work at downinfrontpodcast.com, where we're going to have all of our sort of video teasers, our bios, lots of information that you're going to be finding there. So we sort of appreciate you there. We sort of post our information on just about anywhere in social media. So we're going to be at downinfrontpod. It's going to be on the actual sort of Twitter. So definitely go and check that out. We're going to be on Instagram. We sometimes post some stuff on maybe Reddit, but who knows who sees. So definitely go check out more of our work. Thanks so much for hanging out and tuning in with us, and we will see you next for our next review. We've been changing up our schedule a little bit, so definitely keep an eye out on our social media where we'll talk about our next review. It could be Respect, because Aretha Franklin is amazing. Who knows? And we will see you all next time.
Bye.
Nom nom.
Hug your mothers, no matter who they are.
Dance with your mothers.